You're listening to the Million Dollar Sellers Podcast with your host, Nick Chouquette. Today's show features another amazing entrepreneur who has found success online. Now, let's learn what it takes to be a million dollar seller. All right. Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the Million Dollar Sellers Podcast. Today, we have Fernando on the call. Thanks for coming on today, Fernando. Why don't you let us know where you're at, man? Where are you calling in from?
Thanks, Nick. Man, I really appreciate you having me. So right now, I am in Hawaii. So just, actually in Waikiki right now.
Nice, man. And you've been there for a little bit, right? How long you been in there?
Yeah, so we got here in January, actually. So my fiance and I have been kind of like traveling the US, I think pretty much for most of the pandemic, I guess since July. And then, so yeah, in January, we kind of decided to relocate somewhere a little bit warmer, but also where, yeah, COVID was really low. And so, yeah, we've been hanging out here in Waikiki since.
Nice, man. And you've been doing some surfing from what I remember, right?
Yeah, good memory. Yeah, I'm learning. It's still early days, not that good.
Yeah.
Still longboarding, but yeah, I absolutely love it.
Nice, man. What other stuff are you getting into out there?
Oh, man. So well, we have a decent amount of friends here. So that's cool. Been nice to have a kind of a community. But yeah, man, doing like a lot of hikes, actually. So did like, this one called Alamana, like, which is amazing. You do like, you're rappelling like down, like, you know, the side of a kind of cliff thing. Like it's an adventure. Surfing is a big thing. And then honestly, just kind of hanging out. Hawaii is amazing where, you know, most of the activities are kind of like outdoors based. And so we're just spending a lot of time just kind of at the beach. We walk to the beach every day for like sunset and just kind of like hang out, have a few beers, pretty low key.
Nice, man. That's amazing. I love, I love the opportunity that e-commerce offers us, right? Where we can still have a business running yet we're out doing all these great things that we want to do. Is that a reason you got into e-commerce, or like how did you end up getting into e-commerce?
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, like a lot of us, I think, you know, I read the 4-Hour Work Week, and that kind of like screwed me up, I guess, in terms of like not wanting to work and especially for somebody else. So I think that was kind of like almost like the Matrix. So you take like, you know, the pill and then you kind of just see everything a little bit differently. But yeah, I mean, how I got into entrepreneurship, you know, I never like really thought of entrepreneurship as like, yeah, I don't know why. It doesn't really make sense, especially because both my parents own small business, but I never really thought of it as a career path, especially out of undergrad. Like I went to USC and everything is about finance, like going into investment banking, and that's where you're going to like make the most money. And but yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I worked in finance for about a year and a half, hated it, realized that everybody above me didn't seem like that happy. And so Nick, who's my business partner, and I were like, you know, best friends from college. And so we were kind of going through the same thing in kind of that corporate world. And so we both decided to quit our jobs and go into tech startups. And so we thought that was the best place to like learn entrepreneurship. And there was like a pretty well-known company in Santa Monica at the time that was just like getting a ton of press. Everybody wanted to work there. And so, yeah, we quit our jobs and took 100% sales commissioned roles to work at that company. So we were making like, dude, it was brutal. $20 a close. We were probably making like $2,000 a month. Like we were poor, like basically living on credit cards. But yeah, I mean, it just taught us so much about grit and about starting companies. You know, we learned a lot about what to do and what not to do. But yeah, I mean, it ended up being like an amazing training ground that kind of helped us get to where we are.
Nice, man. Yeah, I love that you guys took that sales job. I mean, but did you guys just like completely bail and go all in, or was it like was there a process there or what?
Yeah, that's a great question. So they had a brutal interviewing process. So like you would interview, you'd go through the resume screening, and then they had like, I think one or two like phone screenings. And then if you made it through all those rounds, then they did like a 2-weekend training boot camp. It was like 8 hours a day, Saturday and Sunday, for 2 weekends. And basically, it was kind of like Survivor. Like, basically, they sat us down in a room of like 10 people. And they're like, right in the beginning, they're like, there's 10 of you. Only 3 of you are getting job offers. Wow. And this is, and we're competing for 100% sales commission role. I don't know. Like, they sold us the dream, which is like crazy. Cause I, you know, I had like a good like finance salary and everything. I'm like, whatever. Like, you know, this isn't really making me happy. And then, so yeah, we just compete like for 4 days, basically over the weekend, or over the 2 weekends, and just, yeah, practicing pitching, like, you know, doing like mock phone calls, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, it's funny because, yeah, obviously Nick and I knew each other from college, but we were just like, oh man, what if they only take one of us? Like, we're gonna be like heartbroken and this whole thing. But yeah, fortunately, we got 2 out of the 3 spots.
Wow.
And then, and then, so yeah, we ended up joining. And then, yeah, I mean, that was kind of our first foray really into tech startups and into the venture world. And yeah, and that kind of, so what's interesting is that company ended up like basically dying after a year. It was crazy. Like, you know, raised at like $100 million valuation, scaled from, we were like about employees 15, 16, scaled up to like 80 within a year, all in Santa Monica. And then it didn't have the right unit economics. And so the company ended up shuttering. But yeah, I mean, it ended up being a great thing for our careers because, I ended up moving to SF to join, a company called AnyPerk at the time. It's rebranded as Fond. But yeah, ended up becoming like the head of sales there, which is kind of crazy in the grand scheme of things with like 1 year sales experience. But yeah, ended up like hiring 70% of the team. The company, I think, has raised like $25 million now in venture. And then, yeah, basically helped start that company. And then Nick went off to a company called TaskUs. I mean, they're like an amazing company. I think the last valuation that I think is, yeah, public, they were at a $500 million value, massive. And so, wow. So yeah, it ended up being like great for us. And then, yeah, after 2 years of that, we ended up coming together and starting this together.
Nice, man. I feel like sales jobs, it's like the closest to entrepreneurship you can get without like actually being an entrepreneur. I feel like that's where a lot of us, we like all go through that phase where we want something that's like, no, I want to be paid for how I perform, you know, because like a lot of us, I think we do an hourly job and we have that mindset of, well, how can I get stuff done faster in an hour? And then you start getting it done faster and you're like, well, now I want to make more money, but you don't get the raise or whatever happens, man. And you're just like, man, I'm out of here.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, I think there's like something beautiful about like not having as much of a, I mean, depending on the job, but like not having as much of a cap on how much you can make, right? It's like, you know, whatever you kind of take down or kill, because, you know, they refer to salespeople as hunters, is like kind of what you eat. And so that having that no ceiling in terms of like commission or bonuses, whatever that might be, is definitely a real big motivator.
Yeah, man, I agree. I went through, I sold knives, Cutco knives, like door to door. You had to ask for referrals at the end of your pitch. Like that was my first sales gig. And then I did timeshares for a while. And that was an interesting one. You know, they were pulling in people off the streets of Virginia Beach with like a free gift card to like Captain George's or something like that. And then these guys were selling them like $10,000-$15,000 timeshare packages in like 2 hours of time. I mean, obviously the conversion rates, you know, it's low, but man, it just blew my mind. And in the way that they have that all mapped out, the training, just like, you know, the steps and like everything they have so dialed in, it blew my mind. It was a great experience. Like, even though I wasn't that successful with it, I learned so much from it. It was a good experience.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said of like, if you can like, kind of like, you know, get over that fear of like reaching out, asking for business, getting on calls, really talking to people. It's just so helpful for entrepreneurship because, you know, I heard this like early on in my career, which I think was helpful. It's a, you know, at the end of the day, if you're kind of at the top of a firm, like if you're running your own business, there's going to be some sales aspect to your to your job, right? It's whether you're, you know, convincing people to join your company and to believe in your vision, like really early on, or if you're like selling to basically earn business to grow your firm, or a combination of the two, there's always going to be something, or selling investors. So I think there's always some kind of like salesmanship that's involved in entrepreneurship, regardless of what you're doing. And so for me, it was like, well, I don't really want to do sales at the time. I love it now. But at the time, I was like, it kind of seemed like a dirty job, yeah, in a sense. And so, but I'm so glad that I did it, just to kind of know that I feel comfortable asking for business and figure out how to present myself, how to, you know, how to win friends and influence people, all that kind of stuff, I think is really huge.
Yeah, man. Communication is so key when you know, like they could teach you the skill, you know, Cutco and the timeshare people, they could teach you the skill, but at the end of the day, you're like, how invested are you in selling knives and someone else's timeshare operation? Like, I'm sure now that you have a successful business and you're trying to bring people in, like you feel good about talking to people and selling them on it, because you know what you're able to do and what you're able to accomplish. And that's when the magic happens, right?
Totally. 100%.
That's what I really liked about Amazon when I first got started. I started out drop shipping, and you know, you could literally list hundreds of listings like in one day once I figured out the bulk upload thing. And then like you just have so many sales coming in, like literally within minutes in some cases. That was like my first experience with Amazon. How did you go from this tech world and then end up in the Amazon world?
Yeah, it's a great question. So after 2 years of like, you know, helping build those startups, Nick and I were kind of at that point, we're like, okay, we've done it now successfully for other people. We're really early. Like, yeah, I was employee number two at the other company. And then, so it was like, okay, let's do this like ourselves. We came from tech, right? And so, but neither of us are engineers. And so, but a lot of our close friends were in e-commerce and then built really successful startups. And so we kind of thought of e-commerce as a great place for business people to succeed. But yeah, I mean, overall, we thought that we could kind of apply what we had learned in tech, you know, about like kind of moving fast, breaking things, and then kind of come into e-commerce and have a different perspective, a different skill set that would suit us well. And so for the first 4 or 5 months, we kind of built our own website that was actually going to kind of like Huckberry, if you're familiar with them, but it was kind of like highlighting products that, you know, the follower of Tim Ferriss would love. We love Tim Ferriss, clearly. but like, yeah, products that were kind of in that intersection of like tech and fitness and design. But yeah, what we realized is that like that model was really hard for us to scale. And since we were bootstrapped and not wanting to take outside investment, that it would take too long to get back to like, you know, making six figures a year. And so we kind of scrapped that after a few months. And then we realized, okay, like, you know, that was our passion project. That was cool. Right now, we just want to make money, to be honest. And then so it was like, okay, what if we just like buy and resell stuff in bulk, kind of like private label, but on eBay. And this is like, you know, late 2014. And then we're working out of Nick's apartment at one point, and then, you know, receive a package, like open the door and receive a package, and it's like an Amazon package. And then it was like kind of this like light bulb moment of like, wait, why are we going to sell on eBay if we order everything on Amazon? Like no one orders on eBay anymore. And it's clearly not moving in that direction where eBay is going to catch up. And so at the time we were just like, can you even sell on Amazon? And like, that was like the whole like million dollar question, I guess. And yeah, we started Googling around, and then there was like courses out there, and we're just like, oh man. So we just like ditched this whole eBay thing within like a 10-minute conversation. And then it was just like, okay, we're doing Amazon. I think it's still like early in terms of like, it's not, like there's not that much information, and for sure things are shifting that way. And then so that was kind of it.
Nice. So what's some of those lessons that you guys learned from the tech startups? And like, I like how you mentioned like breaking stuff quickly. It took me a while to learn that in business, because I was just coming out of like a traditional educational background, where you're taught to like not get things wrong and you want to get 100 on the test. So like, man, I limited myself so much because I was trying to get everything right before I would actually do anything. So is there anything that sticks out in your head that you guys really like learned from that startup world and then applied in e-commerce that helped you get there faster?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's so much. I would say done is better than perfect is a big lesson. So, you know, I think a lot of people have that tendency of like really striving for perfection, which I think is great. But I think startups, you know, they kind of ingrain in that if you're not embarrassed by your first product, it's like a famous like Reid Hoffman quote, the founder of LinkedIn, but it's like, if you're not embarrassed of your first product, you launched too late. And so it's kind of figuring out what is that like MVP or minimal viable product for whatever that it might be. Maybe like right now we're working on our automated reporting dashboard. And so we're kind of applying a lot of those same principles that it's like, look, we just need to get like the MVP. We need to get like the basics done. And then from there, we're going to launch that. We're going to start getting feedback from our customers and then start leveraging that to make improvements. So it's not just like us doing everything in a vacuum. I would say that's a big one. I think one of the other things that one of my mentors from the first startup actually taught me was that like, typically for the first year or so, when you're building a company, you kind of want generalists. You want people that are like really fast learners that can basically wear a lot of hats because you're still figuring a lot of things out. But and then as you scale like your organization, you kind of start putting in people that are more specialized, especially after that kind of year mark. And, you know, it depends on every company. Like if you're doing part-time, maybe it's a little bit longer. But you're kind of bringing more specialists to kind of like round out your team, but also to like go really, really deep. So like now at this stage, I mean, we've been running the company for like 6 years. So 6 years. Well, but yeah, now everyone that we hire is like very, very specific. So like, you know, you're looking for people that have been like VPs at another company that have already seen a company go from whatever, like, you know, 30 million to 100 million that like have this specific background that can kind of come in. But in the early days for us, it was just like, we just need really smart, hungry, like scrappy people, ideally had come from a startup. So they kind of are used to a little bit of that uncertainty and the fact that they're going to have to create a lot of structure. But yeah, I think a great way that someone put it to me is like, you have kind of like the Marines that are the really early stage startup people. Then you have like the, and they're kind of just breaking down doors, breaking things and kind of just trying to figure things out. Then you have like the Army that kind of comes in after one and puts a little bit of like structure and like they're kind of creating more order. And then you have last, like kind of the military police. They're like the kind of the more corporate people, I guess, that will kind of put in a lot more rules and policy. And so you just have different type of like different stage of people and very few leaders and also founders like are good at transitioning all that through the way. And so a big thing for us was just like hiring coaches like to help us like basically figure out how to scale at each stage.
Man, I love the way you laid that out because it's literally, you literally just like explained what I've like gone through on my own with like where I started and my mindset and like how I had to change that and how like I did when I think about the people I had on my team, like they were generalists and that's who I was looking for. Even though I kind of would hear people talk about getting a specialist and, you know, within the past year, I've gotten things more organized and I have way more insight into like, hey, we need someone who can really just focus on copywriting or someone who can focus on account health for all of our Amazon accounts. And I've started to realize those things. So like if someone listening to this right now is like in that position, because it's crazy, like in MDS, you might think everyone outside of MDS, you might think that people in there have these big giant teams, but it's not always the case. There's a lot of solopreneurs in MDS that have done over $1 million in revenue. You know, I'm not sure how big you guys were when you got into the group, but man, I struggled with that for so long. So like, if you're listening to this now and it's really, you know, striking a chord with you, like, you know, start looking at that specialization and like what departments are taking up a lot of your time and your team's time And, you know, that's when I could really dig in and say, okay, I need this person or that person to do this specific thing. It sounds like you had a great mentor, man, to teach you that stuff. Cause with the internet, like, you can hear so many things and just a lot of noise. And sometimes you just don't know what to do, you know, what to implement. But if you've had someone who's walked that path, that's close to you, that's great. But I'm glad I ended up there anyways. My road was just a little more windy. I feel like, this is some things I've learned just like in the past year or so, honestly, but it clicks, man. Once you realize it and you get those people in, things start to click and you just see the progression. And that's another thing I love about business is when you're able to figure those things out and you see the results of implementing them. How did you guys start to build out your team for Amazon? And did you guys use any, EOS or any program that you really attribute that success to when it came to building out your company?
Yeah. So in the beginning, we had hired, in the Philippines and India before, in our previous startups. And so that was always kind of something in the background of mind. It's like, okay, we're going to do that. But I think at the time we thought we'd only do it specifically for really like basic responsibilities. So like customer support, maybe like lead gen, stuff like that. I remember like at the time it was just Nick and I, and we kind of just like, you know, whatever the responsibility was like, okay, who's like maybe a little bit like more prone to this, and that's just going to be assigned to you. And I just remember like, you know, the business is getting bigger at the time. Like, we scaled really fast. We were doing, okay, I don't know, maybe like 200K a month in like month six, month seven. And like, yeah, I remember like, yeah, Nick and I were just like kind of catching up. I'm like, oh, what are you working on? I got to do my support tickets. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Like, dude, like, you should not be like, I'm like, wait, you should not be working on support tickets. I was like, we need to hire someone in the Philippines, like, or somewhere. Right now, that's going to take off. And then, you know, I think, yeah. And so we started with the generalists, right? And so people that could just kind of take on admin tasks, support, and just kind of like as an extension of us, which I think was great. And that helped us scale to like, honestly, probably to like 10 million a year. I think, over time, like we just needed like a more experienced team. And yeah, so you kind of asked like about EOS. And so, other mentors had kind of brought up hire coaches, like just don't be cheap about it. But like, you know, I think their two pieces of advice, was like hire like a really, really good finance person. Cause like your level of like financial acumen needs to be really, really high. And then just like hire coaches and like help them, have them help you like scale as leaders. And so, I think that the CEO coach was really, really helpful for us in terms of kind of implementing a lot of those kind of EOS best practices, everything from like, yeah, the level 10s. We don't follow like their initiative structure. We got actually something from a different coach, which is called OKRs, slight variation of it, but that we actually like a lot better. I think we kind of like try to pick and choose based on what we learned from like, you know, our, you know, employees that are like really experienced, but also from like kind of the outside consultants that kind of help us, you know, ideally make less mistakes.
Nice, man. Definitely some good advice. There's I started out in arbitrage reselling, and like in that community, there's a big kind of push against like hiring coaches. They're like, nah, just go on YouTube, man. Watch YouTube videos. It's like, I look back on it and it's like, they're still not, and I'm including myself, they're not valuing their time, right? Like, they're not putting a number on what their hourly time's worth. And like, at some point when you've got some money coming in, you've got to start to realize, you know, how much you make in your business working hourly. And that helped me kind of decide like, okay, I should be focusing on this stuff, not this stuff. It's a tough mindset shift, man. Did you guys ever go through that, or did you feel like that tech startup experience kind of skipped that for you guys?
a good question. Maybe it's because we're Asian, so it's like, you know, investment in education. I don't know if I can say that. So I've heard that before where a lot of people are like, it's too expensive. Our coaches are really expensive, to be clear. But I think there's just so much missed opportunity, right? Like, yeah. I think about it the cheapest way of doing something is like buying the book, right? And then trying to self-implement. Like the next level up is maybe buying a course, right? And then you're like, and it's like, you know, obviously a package, maybe there's like coaching sessions. The most expensive, but I think the most effective is hiring a coach. And like, it's not any coach, right? It's not like some like life coach that just decided like they didn't like their career and then it's like, okay, I'm gonna become a life coach. It's like an experienced entrepreneur that you really respect that can kind of come in and say like, hey, you want to get to 100 million? I've done it. Like, I can tell you exactly what you need. And you're getting like basically an advisor that, you know, if you're building something really big, especially, it's cheaper than giving away equity, but that can like, is invested in you, that will meet with you frequently, that can do so many things that you normally can't get. Like, even if you get like a friend, right, to kind of be like a sounding board, like it's unlikely that your friend is going to go through and like meet with all of your leadership team and then find out like, okay, who's really good. Because for instance, let's say I have like a, you know, a VP of finance. Like, this is for me, like the first VP of finance that I've ever hired. So like, do I really know if this person is that good? Or maybe like they're still a, like junior, maybe they should be a manager. But having that outside perspective of like someone that's met tons of VPs of finance, that's interviewed them for their clients and that's hired them on their own and can be like, yeah, this person's coachable or can like, is should be a VP. Or maybe like, honestly, you need to hire a CFO. Like this person isn't like, is it going to get you to that 100 million or whatever that number is? And it also creates like an amazing, like outside accountability. Like, you know, for me and Nick, we've been friends for so long. If I'm late on something, he's gonna be like, don't chill. You know, don't worry about it. Like, you know, and then if he's late, it's the same thing, right? Cause like, you know, we're friends. But I think having the outside coach, and we're committing to like, hey, we're going to get this done by this day. Yeah. And we respect him so much that we're not going to like drop the ball. Even though like, I have the utmost respect for Nick, is that we're friends first. And so we don't have that same level of like accountability. So I think there's just so many things that you for sure can learn on your own, but you're not getting that experience. And that's what you're really paying for. Like, we're having them come into our level 10s, kind of like audit them and be like, hey, here's some suggestions of how you can make improvements. Like one thing, like, we had a tendency, we would have never known because I don't even think it's brought up in EOS, but it's that we shouldn't be running the level 10. You should have somebody else running it because we should be like more active participants. And so I thought that was like an interesting realization I would have never thought of if it wasn't for like the coach. And so just like little things like that, that you can make improvements to really quickly. And it's great. Like now, yeah, he's meeting with a lot of our senior leaders. And coaching them in terms of like different areas of leadership that they want to work on as well.
Nice. So for the level 10 meetings, they actually suggested like, you're still at the level 10, but you're not the one just leading it. Someone else is.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's what we're moving towards right now. Based on his advice is historically we've been running them, but yeah, what we're going to be trying, is having somebody else like kind of run the meeting and moderate. So that we can just be more focused on like bringing ideas and creating clarity versus like actually like moderate.
I like it, man. I should probably take note of that myself because I've definitely been running mine. You laid out a lot of great advice there. Like, can you kind of speak to some pain points that someone listening, they might be going through that you think would be like a sign that they need to hire a coach?
I mean, honestly, I think once you have like a certain level of percentage that you feel like safe and comfortable with, and you have like a pretty consistent amount of revenue and you can afford whatever that is, you know, I would say like coaches probably run anywhere from like 2 to 5K a month, right? And so maybe depending on how early you want to invest in it, maybe once you're over like 20K in profit a month, up to like, maybe a floor of like 50K. And yeah, I would really consider it. And just thinking about it as you're like investing in your infrastructure, you know, I know a lot of like large product companies will invest like, you know, whatever, 5% of revenue into like R&D. I think for a lot of like private label businesses, specifically on Amazon, you don't have to invest that much, thankfully. But I do think investing in your team in terms of your leadership and helping you just, make less mistakes and focus on the right things, I think is really invaluable. I think, they've paid for themselves like multiple times over, just like helping create clarity, helping us, sometimes like having to like shift people around into different leadership roles, just based on like their kind of like recommendations. And they'll kind of like help you even figure out how to structure the conversation, right? If you're having to make some like, difficult decisions and personnel changes, they can be like, okay, how are you planning on having this conversation? What's your game plan? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And it's like so many like kind of second order effects that you don't necessarily always think about because it's your first time having this conversation, but they can bring in that perspective of like, oh, don't forget these other conversations that you need to have. And I think it just so like it ends up going so much smoother because you've thought through everything. And I think that's like the real advantage.
Okay. So are your coaches that you've worked with, are they guys like us who have kind of like been through it and worn a lot of different hats and they came out successful? Or are you hiring coaches that specialize in certain areas of business? Or both, maybe?
Yeah. So I think it all depends on the stage of your business and what you want. I would say probably the first one I would probably say is like a general business coach or a CEO coach. That would probably be my first recommendation for the listeners. And then they're going to kind of review their team. They're going to review like, do you have like a CEO dashboard or kind of like a metrics dashboard? They're going to review your accountability chart and do you have the right people in the right seats? They're just going to kind of just like look at your system, like basically it's like, hey, like, is this good or is bad? And then help you like kind of prioritize working on those things. And then I think over time, you kind of just start hiring different coaches for different things. Like, I hired like a public speaking coach, like Nick's hired like kind of like a performance, like mindset coach, where we've hired kind of like more CFO coaches. Obviously like attorneys are kind of coaches in a sense. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's just so many areas of a business that can use like real expertise. And, as you're growing, maybe you don't have that budget to bring on like a general counsel, like right in the beginning, or like a CFO, then, maybe it makes sense to have that person kind of coach one of the people that you have internally and be like, hey, here's what you need to think about at the next level. And so it's a great investment for our team. They know that like, hey, we're in it with you like for the long haul because we're investing in this, but it's also, you're getting better results, right? Because you're not having to pay for someone that's like 20 years of experience, 30 years of experience. You're hiring someone a little bit more junior, but they're getting that like that really like one-on-one coaching from someone that's been around. In terms of their background, one of our coaches, like I'm in YPO, so he does a lot of like YPO businesses, and so he does a lot of like one-on-one coaching and annual planning. He's that kind of a career coach. The other one that we've worked with is like, he works with CEO Coaching International. Just like, he's a boss. Like, and that was like what we wanted as our first coach. It's just like, we want someone that has just, has like really scaled and that we really respect. And that like, when we take their, like, when we get advice from them, we're going to take it because we have so much respect for them. And that is what we're looking for. And so I would say that's the kind of background, but they're both kind of in their 50s.
Okay. And so, I hope people are taking this knowledge that you're dropping to heart, but why don't you like let them know what it's done for you? Like, where did you guys start out and where are you at now? So they can really know the power of operating this way.
Oh man. It's been huge. I would say Yeah, I mean, it's hard to compare like revenue numbers, especially because we've sold a lot of businesses like since. But I would say what it's really done is helped us like really form like a really solid like organizational chart and kind of weed out the people that didn't make the most sense for the organization and really force us to prioritize putting the right people in the right seats, which you don't really like realize how important it is until you make that switch. You kind of, excuse me, sometimes you have those people you're kind of making excuses for that are been around for, you know, since the beginning, and you're kind of just like hoping that one day they're just gonna like magically become this all-star. But I think you kind of mentioned enough to them to the coach, and then they're like, you got to prioritize this change. You know what I mean? And they'll help you, you know, kind of guide the conversation, and they'll give you like a lot of perspective, and they kind of help you create that urgency to make those replacements. And yeah, I mean, it ends up just being better for the organization. Like I'm less stressed. I have just like stronger people that report directly to me. And so I think there's just so much advantage to working with a coach like that. Yeah, I would say those are like some of like the really big things off the top. It helps you prioritize. I think like they're going to make you really, if you're like going after a new shiny object, and if you're like, you know, really like soliciting their feedback, you're going to be like, okay, well, how big is this idea? And they're going to ask, you know, more questions that is going to make you realize like, hey, maybe I should put this off to Q3 or Q4. Or, you know, maybe like this is like a distraction and you have so much other stuff that you need to prioritize to like figure this stuff out first. And so I think that like has just helped us make so many less mistakes as well.
Yeah, it's great to always have like someone who's keeping you in check, because no matter how good you think you are, you're not like... you're not the best at everything, right? Like there's always 100%. Something we're missing, I feel like, because we get so focused on certain things at different times. What are some of the things you guys have been able to accomplish? You mentioned selling a couple businesses. You know, what if you can talk about those, let us know what those companies were, and then let us know where you're at now and what you've got going on.
Yeah. So last year we sold some of our brands that were like kind of sourced in China. So we sold this to one of the aggregators. Shout out to D1 Brands. They're great. They're also an MDS. We sold a few of those brands to them specifically. And then also as a result of MDS, so we met like a lot of like really good friends within the community, like, you know, you, but and then also like some of our actual like business partners. So Anthony Bui Tran is basically the founder of Seller Tradecraft. We partnered with him. And then we partnered with Leo Lemon. And then we started Pixelfy together. So the four of us. And then that ended up doing super well. And then we actually sold it in March to actually two MDS members, which is kind of funny. So like Ian, who started MDS, had also started Rebate Key with Leo Lemon as well. And so it was kind of cool, like full circle, I guess, if you will. We ended up selling Pixelfy to Rebate Key. And just like very incestuous, I guess, within the MDS family. Ended up finding it a great home with the Rebate Key team. And I know they're gonna do amazing things with Pixelfy. That's like some of the stuff that we've been working on in the past that's come to fruition. And then, what we're working on now is just Nick and I, but we're working on marketplaceops.com. And so that's basically like a leading strategy firm for Amazon, where we help with a lot of like, we call them like the challenger brands, but these kind of like up and coming like CPG brands, and we help them maximize their Amazon.
Nice, man. Yeah, it's amazing the friendships and business opportunities that happen within MDS. I mean, it's, you know, talk about like networking, man. Like it's such a good network of people. It blows my mind all the time, just like the things that happen when you get us all in a room together and like the ideas that people have and you're in, it's not just an idea, like you're having an idea with people who take action and implement things. And that's when the great stuff can happen, like building a company that gets sold and then, you know, being partnered with another company and things like that, man. I love hearing those stories. So why don't you tell us a little more about Marketplace Ops? Like, what type of businesses do you work with? How can people find you if they're interested in what you've got going on there?
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, in terms of businesses, yeah, we're typically working with companies that are doing at least like $1 million in revenue up to, like, I think the biggest is about 50 million. Companies that just, you know, maybe have an internal team or they're wanting to replace an Amazon agency, but they want, a really like expert team. Like, you know, we have a team of like 60 that are, you know, hyper specialized now in terms of every area of Amazon. They're really looking for the right partner that can, you know, help them scale and hit their goals. I think that's like the main thing. We work with a few Amazon kind of native brands, but we also work with a lot of like CPG, like better for you brands as well. Okay. That's where the majority of our clients are.
Nice. And where can people reach you to find out more info about what you have going on there?
Oh yeah. Just Fernando@marketplaceops.com or on LinkedIn. You can always reach out to.
Nice, man. So, dude, you've dropped a lot of knowledge here. Lots of good experience. It's amazing what you guys have been able to accomplish. How old are you, by the way? I don't even know.
I'm turning 35 in a few weeks.
Wow. Actually. Yeah. So all this before 35, man, that's absolutely amazing. And, did you just get married?
Engaged.
Yeah. So just got engaged. No kids yet. No kids yet. Yeah. Nice, man. Well, you've accomplished a lot before that happens. Props to you, man. That's amazing. If you had to go back and do it all over again, man, I feel like you got so much right. Like, what would you do differently? Knowing what you know, man. Now.
Oh, dude, honestly, I'm making it seem easy. Yeah, we've made so many mistakes. I think I would say two things. I would say, like, failures are part of the problem. We actually talked about this in our team town hall a few weeks ago, is that, like, look, mistakes happen, and that's a part of the process. I think, you know, a lot of the time when you're joining a startup for the first time, you kind of think that everything's linear, and go up into the right, and like, you don't really make mistakes. But I think setbacks are a normal part of like learning, and I think it also means that you're taking on like a risk, which is great, and you're pushing the envelope. And so I would say just to expect that as part of the process, and you know, you just try not to make the same mistakes over again, but just expect that you're going to make a lot of mistakes. That's the first piece of advice. And the second one that I just heard recently that I had to remind myself, because I'm always like super urgent, pushing things like really, really quickly. But I think, you know, business is a marathon and not a sprint. And remembering that, I think, is really helpful. And so, yeah, just making sure that you're keeping your team's morale really high, that you're thinking about the long term and not just like a quick buck, and really investing into your, like, your team, into your infrastructure, into systems, so that at the end of the day, like, you have a business that kind of like fits in your goals. Like, you know, I think a lot of people want to be able to work a little bit less or to not have to be putting out fires and all that kind of stuff. But then on the same time, they're kind of like me, where they're just like pushing things so quickly that they're making a ton of mistakes. And so just realizing that comes at a sacrifice if you're pushing so fast that you're going to have to put out more fires. And so there's kind of an interesting balance that you have to kind of find. That is really helpful. And so brand management has been really helpful for us in terms of really focusing on like, okay, what is our system? What is our reporting? Like, how is this all going to like work together? And like, what is our flywheel? How are we going to like really reinforce that and only do things that fit into that flywheel? So I think just becoming more disciplined has been really transformational for us.
Yeah, that's great advice, man. And I'm kind of the same way. Like, I like to move fast, and it can wear you out, man. But like, I've been telling myself recently, like, hey, you're building an asset, you know, it's, you don't have to make money from this idea tomorrow. Like, it might come 6 months from now, you know, like, and when you start building all those different assets and then things just kind of come into place in the long run, man. So it's, you know, thanks for saying that, because I constantly need to remind myself of that, because I do always just want to keep going and stay in hustle mode. So definitely trying to slow down a little bit. Thanks for coming on the podcast. It was a really good time having you on, and I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Are you a million-dollar seller looking to network with like-minded entrepreneurs? Apply for membership now at milliondollarsellers.com. Leave us a review and subscribe now so you don't miss out on next week's episode.